I have long been a fan of the idea of the incarnation, the idea behind the Christmas story, that the infinite God chose to become finite and put on human flesh. For me, the Christmas story makes God more personal. It makes God real somehow, the way that the Velveteen Rabbit becomes real. When we see God in the baby Jesus, we see a God whose presence does not frighten us, a God whose hand we can hold, a God who will understand the joys and limits of having a body that can dance and sing and run, a body that can get broken, a body that will not last forever. The Christmas story takes theology and makes it into a painting, allowing us an inroad into God, allowing the idea of God to become more intimate and more compassionate. I think maybe W.H. Auden put it best as he contemplated the Christmas story and wrote these lines, "Remembering the stable where, for once in our lives, everything became a you and nothing was an it." It has been fun this year, I think, for us to use the creche for the time with children. I do appreciate the accessibility of a nativity set. There are human beings there, some kind of plain like Mary and Joseph, some rough like the shepherds, some exotic like the wise men who won't show up for another couple of weeks. There are clunky oxen and cows and wobbly donkeys and, yes, adorable sheep. And there's a place for all of them. They all belong. They are yous, and none of them are its. They are also witnesses to a birth, witnesses to the incarnation which they do not understand but still are amazed by. So that's why I invited the kids to imagine where they would be in the nativity set. Would they be next to Mary, wanting to hold Jesus? One of them would. Would they hold Joseph's hand, a little unsure of what to do, but wanting to be there? I might have done that this week. Would they hang out with the silent animals or chit-chat with the shepherds? Because, friends, we belong there too. The incarnation means that we're not simply things that God made and forgot about, but beloved children who are cherished. The incarnation makes God more personal, more intimate, more welcoming, but more than that, I think the incarnation was God's best way of saying, I love you. I love you, and I want to know what it's like to be you. I love you, and I want to heal you. I love you, and I want to save you. All of that in this little tiny baby born into the world the way all babies are born, birthed by his mother, Mary. A friend recently shared a poem about Mary with me, and it is by, of all people, the Sufi mystic Rumi. He says, "The body is like Mary, and each of us has a Jesus inside. Who is not in labor, in holy labor? Every creature is. See the value of true art when the earth or a soul is in the mood to create beauty. For the witness might then for a moment know beyond any doubt, God is really there within. So innocently drawing life from us with her umbilical universe infinite existence, though also needing to be born. Yes, God also needs to be born. Birth from a hand's loving touch, birth from a song, from a dance, breathing life into the world. The body is like Mary, and each of us has a Christ within. I wonder what we're giving birth to. Because each of us who follows Jesus carries his love inside of us and gives birth to that love all the time. But just as we don't always know if we're having a boy or a girl, we don't always know what form that birthed love will take. Let me show you a few forms that love takes when it's given birth by very ordinary, flawed, wonderful people. The first story is from my dear friend Allison, whose parents went through a terrible, terrible divorce. They fought about everything. They couldn't agree about anything. And in the end, her father took half the china set and her mother took the other. Well, Allison's parents, though divorced, lived in the same town. And over the years, Allison's father became more and more incapacitated because of his diabetes. And Allison's mother took care of him. She'd call to check on him. She'd take him to doctor's appointments. She would bring him healthy meals. And this went on for months, if not for a couple of years. One day, Allison's mother was at home and the doorbell rang, and Allison's father stood on the front porch with a box of china. He wanted to give it back to her as a way of thanking her for all of her tender mercies. Sometimes we give birth to forgiveness. The next story came to me through some friends who shared it, who had originally heard it on NPR's StoryCorps. It was Christmas Eve in 1967. William Lynn Weaver, 18 at the time, was walking in Mechanicsville, the neighborhood he grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, when he saw a boy gliding down the street on a bicycle. "Boy, that looks like my brother's bike," he said. When he got home, he asked his younger brother, Wayne, where that bicycle was. "It was on the steps," he replied, but it wasn't. The Weaver boys tracked down where the boy lived, an unlit shack in an alley, and planned to confront him. "Now, my brother and I, we're going to beat this boy," but my father was there, and he said, "Just shut up and let me talk." An elderly man with a cane answered the knock on the door. The home appeared cold and dark, and he had a single candle for light. His grandson was the boy who stole the bike. "He was the same age as my brother, about 10 years old," Weaver said. The little boy starts crying and said, "I just wanted something for Christmas." They took the bike and went home. "My father tells my mother, and she doesn't say anything," Weaver says. "She just starts cutting the turkey in half and all the fixings. She starts packing it up. My father went to the coal yard and got a big bag of coal, and then he told my brother, he said, 'You've got another bike, don't you?' My brother said, 'Yeah.' And the three returned to the shack in the alley, this time with food, some coal to provide heat, and the bike. The little boy is just crying, but the thing that moved me the most was the old man," Weaver said. "My father gave him $20, which was a huge deal back then, and said, 'Merry Christmas.' The man said thank you and broke down in tears." And Weaver concludes, "My father was a chauffeur. My mother was a domestic. So we didn't have a lot of stuff. And that Christmas, I don't even remember what gift I got. But I do know that made me feel better than any Christmas I've ever had." Sometimes we give birth to generosity. The last picture is less of a story and more of an invitation of what love might look like when we give birth to it. It comes from Sam Wells, the vicar of St. Martin's in the Fields Church in London, and I think his words are wise. He says, "What if the fundamental problem that we need to work to overcome, that embedded flaw at the core of being human, isn't mortality? Consider all the ways that we struggle mightily to overcome our mortality, to extend life, transcend our physical limitations, care for others' most basic physical needs for food and shelter. Sometimes these are good and necessary things. But is this the central human problem? Mortality? What if actually it's isolation? What if we reconsider our work and being in the world around the fundamental problem of human isolation, that what we need more than anything is for someone to come be with us, not someone to do something for us, that what we need to do for others in need is be with them, be present with them. Sometimes we give birth to presence. I don't know what you are laboring at this day in this season of your life. I imagine that some of you are laboring on health and healing. I know some of us are doing the hard labor of grief Some of us are giving birth to forgiveness, knowing that somebody has to make the first move if reconciliation is going to happen. Some people are giving birth to generosity, bringing food to shelters and coats and blankets to people living on the street, or arguing that there are families desperately in need of food stamps and health insurance. Some people are giving birth to being present for others, being present for people who are terribly afraid of losing their job or being separated from their family or dying from violence. What we are laboring at and what we're giving birth to is our work to do. But that work won't fix everything. We will still become ill and we will die. We will still fight and separate and not speak to each other. We will still have those in our midst who struggle to survive, to find food and shelter, and there will still be war and fear. When Jesus was born, the Roman Empire was all powerful, but there was poverty and there was violence. The birth of that baby didn't change those things, but his birth and all of our labors and our birthings bring to the world something that no war, no poverty, no violence, no death, no fear can conquer. The birth of Christ and the birth of forgiveness and generosity and presence bring hope to the world. We can live through almost anything if we have hope. It's the hope that things can change and get better. It's the hope that the light shines in the darkness and the darkness does not overwhelm it. It's the hope that love really can heal the wounds that we carry in this life. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. For a child has been born for us. Amen.